start wagging us by
recording
the witness
in
to
progress
start our meeting with the music being played. Let me just check from the virtual platform. Honorable Nyonzo, are you there? It's now exactly 2 o'clock. Honorable Nyonzo, are you there? He's not there, just to make sure that they can hear us. Honorable Nyonzo?
I'm here, Chair.
Ah, okay. And course, now there, that you're there, we can start. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
You're there, Advocate Mpofu?
Yes, Chairperson, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. I now hand over to you to proceed. Welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Advocate Chualule.
Good afternoon, Advocate Mpofu.
Right. Okay, so we were still just talking about the what I call the unfinished business here. So it would be fair to say then that some of these hot potatoes, as we describe some of these investigations, would not have landed in on the lap of Advocate Advocate Mkhwebane had they been finished in time, correct?
Correct.
Yes, and in particular with the CX report, as I understand it, Advocate Madonsela even wanted to release it on her last day of work, or at least there was a suggestion that it would have been released on the 14th of October, which was her last day at the office, correct?
Yes, the prelim would have been released by that
yes,
time.
Yes, the provisional report, of course, yes.
Yeah, the provisional report, yes.
Yes, but even that plan failed because of the what I call the mad rush of the last few days. I was involved in the whole state capture litigation saga. So basically, the planned release of CX report did not materialize, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And the same goes for the Frieda report. That also, it became impossible to finalize it before her departure, correct?
Correct.
And we all know the story of the state capture report. That itself, if it wasn't for the litigation that I've just referred to that we were involved in, that would have also been left hanging, correct?
The intention of the PP at that time was to release that report. I think if I recall quite well, there was an issue about an interdict. That's what I recall. That's the reason why that report was not released, but it had been finalized at the time of her leaving the office on the 14th of October.
Yes, actually what happened, but I'm sure some witnesses will talk about this. What actually happened is that you're quite right. On the 13th, there were two interdicts that were brought to block the release of that report. And eventually the court, we made an arrangement in court that it should be, for lack of a better word, quarantined and given to the speaker. As a result, it was only released, I think, on the 3rd of November, 2016, when the new public protector was already in place. Would you, more or less, without knowing the exact dates, agree with that sequence of events?
Yes, no, I do agree with that sequence of events.
Thank you. Right. Now, then of course, there was also this problem of leakages, which was a bit of a difficult thing to deal with. Because on the one hand, you had an obligation to give people their Audi rights. But on the other hand, the reports were being leaked to the public media, correct?
Correct.
And one of the ways in which this was to be dealt with, as discussed at think tank with the new public protector, was this idea of releasing Section 7-9 notices rather than provisional reports, correct?
Correct.
Right. And I think you've explained correctly that that new regime, as it were, was only going to apply to new reports going forward, but it didn't apply to, for example, the CX report, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, I just want to explore something to you with you, which is this. Putting aside the unfortunate reasons why the report was not finalized in time, why it took so almost 5 to 6 years, the point of the matter is that once it was not finalized, then the new public protector obviously had to read the boxes that you gave her and put her own flavor or her own gloss on the issues, correct? Hers was not simply just to rubber stamp and sign the report as it was, correct?
Correct.
Right. And it was in that context, therefore, that among other things, she asked you to investigate after she had read the evidence that you had given to her. One of the things she asked you was to do the investigation about how other reserve banks operated worldwide, correct?
Correct.
And you said that you did that work. You understood that it was coming from whatever take she had on this report, correct?
Yeah, there was no explanation per se for me, and that's why in my evidence I do indicate that I find that to be, for lack of a better word, bizarre, in the sense that there was nothing from the complaint complaint that suggested that perhaps he wanted us to take that route of perhaps looking at how other central banks around the world, you know, their mandate and whether they are state-owned or they are privately owned and all those things. So that was I had an issue with that part. Even though I didn't ask her why we had to go that direction, I did that nonetheless.
Yes, no, but that's exactly where I want to go. I mean, if you found it bizarre, is it not more bizarre that you would investigate something that you did not understand? Why did you not ask her why she wanted to explore that angle?
So there were many things that we're dealing with during that particular time, being legal research for her and mm-hmm. also this part. So for me, I thought that there would be an opportunity at a later stage that this would be discussed. And if you look at the prelim report, the issue about other central banks around the world, I don't think it did even feature in the report. Probably she had a thinking about it, but she didn't proceed with the idea of probably putting a version that would suggest that in other banks around the world, this is how the central banks around the world, this is how their mandate are crafted and perhaps we should follow that. That didn't find expression in the prelim report. So that's why I didn't find it to be anything of important for me. I would have asked her at the time when the final version was prepared, when that is now in the final version that she was going to sign, what the context was, you know, in as far as suggesting that particular part, but it didn't find expression in the prelim report. So it had no value for me.
Yes. No. All right. Okay, sorry, there was some noise there. Yeah. So apart from the fact that you were dealing...
It's certainly not here.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I go up a goatee. Please proceed.
I think lapha kum Africa, Mr. Nyosh. The point I simply want to make, Advocate Shualule, before we move on from this, is that do I understand therefore from your evidence that you agree that you should have asked for an explanation, but because you were busy, you did not do so?
Yes, but my evidence is I was going to ask if that information had obviously been brought to the provisional report before it was signed, what the reasons were. She would agree with me that I was quite a person who would ask almost everything that was going on when she joined the office, in the private office. So I was not a person who was going to just let an issue go without understanding it. And in this one, that research that we're talking about now did not find expression in the provisional report. So there was no reason for me to really have any issue about that. I just find it to be an issue of her wanting perhaps to understand how the mandate of other central banks around the world would. But it didn't really have an issue. I didn't really have an issue with doing that particular research for as long as it was not going to find expression in the report, because we were not asked to do any of that by the complainant.
Yes. Okay. How much experience have you got as an investigator?
How much experience have I been?
Did you have as an investigator?
I had around 3 years experience as an investigator. But even prior to joining the PPI, I had obviously worked in other organizations as a person who was doing investigation or the legal departments where I was working.
Yes, and you would agree with the general sentiment that's always expressed. I think it was more forcefully expressed in the Mail and Guardian case, that an investigation is not like an adjudication process. It can lead you to places that you never even imagined when you started the investigation, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, and I mean, an example of that, a current example of which you might be aware, is the Zondo report, which was meant just to investigate the Gupta alleged corruption from your office. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
And it ended up being what it has been now, like 4 years later, investigating all sorts of things beyond the Gupta alleged corruption, correct?
Correct.
And it even went as far as making suggestions about constitutional amendments on the voting methods in South Africa, which at face value had nothing to do with the Gupta corruption, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Yes. So the point I'm simply making is I'm disputing your statement that simply because, or rather, let's start here. How could you do a research on, well, if you didn't know where it fits in respect of what? How did you manage that miraculous fit?
Okay, the Power Protector was quite new in the office at that particular time. You know, as part of obviously ensuring that she understand the investigation and the work that has been done and the work that obviously still needed to be done. We had several discussions, you know, in this regarding this particular matter. So I didn't have a problem in doing that research. If the research was obviously for her to have a broader understanding of what we're dealing with. And that's why I agree with you on the Mail and Guardian investigation judgment, you know, that spoke about approaching investigation with an open mind and all those kind of things. But in this particular context, my evidence is I didn't have a problem in doing the research for her to understand, you know, the mandate of other central banks around the world. But obviously, because that didn't come to the final, the preliminary report, I have no problem. I didn't even ask her why should we do this part, because there was no suggestion from her. For example, where I had received an email from her that says, as part of us finalizing the prelim report, please ensure that this information about the research that we have conducted find expression in the report. That didn't come through.
Yeah, no, but you did not know that before, at the time when she was asking you to do the research, because the provisional report was not in place yet, obviously, correct?
Yes, correct.
Right. Okay. Anyway, to the extent that you then did the research, you might not have seen the connection. That's fine. I'll accept that for now. But she obviously did see the connection between that research and whatever work she was doing. Otherwise, she wouldn't have asked you to do it, correct? Okay, let me repeat it. Now I'm saying, if I accept for now that you as a person, as you have explained, you did not see the connection between the research that you were asked to do and the CX matter. Obviously, the public protector saw some connection. Otherwise, she would not have asked you to do the research. Correct?
Correct. I would agree with that vision.
Yes. And after all, as you've pointed out to Advocate Mayosi, she has the final say, and the report is her report, correct?
Correct.
And therefore she would be entitled to take whatever angle she assumes to be relevant to the matter, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. And let's just then test your statement about, but before we come to that, let's test your statement about the relevance. You know now, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, that the issue of the mandate of the Reserve Bank did find expression, to use your term, in the final report, correct?
Yes, I do.
Yes. And you, in that context, you probably then were able to, even in retrospect, make sense of why that work was needed beforehand, because it then found itself into the final report, correct?
You are asking me if I did have an understanding of why the PP had then came up with the remedial action that says Parliament must relook at that. Is that what you're asking me?
No. Let me rephrase it maybe. I'm saying when you eventually saw the final report, were you able to make sense of where the issue of the mandate fitted in her assessment of the issues?
No, I didn't.
You are not? Okay.
No, I didn't. I didn't understand why that had to feature in the final report. But obviously, I was no longer there at that time, so there may have been evidence that was provided by people when they submitted their, response to the prelim report, which may have moved her to that particular direction. And it's an area that I would not want to comment because I was no longer with the office.
No, fair enough. No. I was asking, I understand that. And you've made that clear in your statement as well. The only thing I was asking, and I think you've answered, is that, so it didn't, to you, when you saw the final report, it didn't then say, oh, that question I had in November when I didn't know where this thing fits in. Now I can see where she was going with it. That didn't happen.
Yeah, no, it did happen. Whether I agree or not, probably is another question. But
that's a different matter. Yeah. Okay, good. At least, okay, that's good. That's step one. Yeah. And then the issue that then becomes an issue of substance, and I'm going to explore it with you. would you agree that this was quite a shall we call it controversial and difficult investigation. I mean, it was unfortunate that it had to be landed on the lap of the new public protector, but that it involved very powerful players, correct?
Yes, I do agree. Yes. And also, I think just to contextualize that, Advocate Mpofu, the most difficult part of it was this idea of the run on the bank and all those things. So obviously that obviously came to us with the, we had to be very cautious about what we were doing. And as far as that is concerned, because when people argue that if you do this, there'll be a run on the rent and all those kind of things, you had to be obviously mindful of the consequences of whatever it is that you are going to come up with. But obviously the investigation is always, obviously the outcome of it is always based on the evidence that you have and not what is happening outside. Yeah.
Accept that, So it was complex for those two reasons and maybe other reasons. Firstly, as I said, it involved quite powerful persons. I mean, it can't get more powerful than the president of the country that you had to interview, the former president, the Reserve Bank itself, probably the largest bank in the country, that kind of magnitude of role players was quite significant, correct?
Correct.
And then, of course, you say that it also involved there was this, I call it a scarecrow tactic, but you might have a different definition. But there was this issue that was always being thrust onto the investigation about that this will destroy the economy and the run on the rand and all that, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Now, and specifically the and then of course the other big issue was this thing of jurisdiction. There was this claim that you, meaning not you personally, that the public protector had no business in any event being involved in this because it was outside of her jurisdiction, correct?
Correct.
And but you and the public protector were quite determined that you should get to the bottom of this thing. You are not deterred by all those problems that I've just mentioned, correct?
Correct.
All right. And one of the issues that I'm now trying to assist you so that you can see maybe the connection between this whole thing and the mandate of the bank, of the Reserve Bank here. Is it so that one of the findings that Advocate Madonsela had made was for improper conduct and maladministration on the part of what was then fashionably known as the three TMs. It involved Minister Trevor Manuel, involved Minister Tito Mboweni in his later capacity, not as a minister, and also President Thabo Mbeki. Those were some of the role players, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And she had found actually that there was maladministration on the part of President Mbeki and Minister Manuel, among others, correct?
Can you please refer me to the paragraph of that part so that at least I can with certainty be able to confirm?
Okay, you don't remember that offhand.
I do remember, but
yeah, no, I'll take you to the paragraph. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
If you go to your provisional report, If you go to 3167.
3167.
Yes. You can read against the letter I, if you can read it out.
The letter I?
Yes.
Okay. The conduct of the former Minister of Finance, Trevor Manuel, and former President Thabo Mbeki for failing to process the CX report is therefore in violation of Section 195, Section 237, and Section 96(2) of the Constitution and the Executive Members Ethics Act of 1998, as well as and Section 63, Subsection 2 of the Public Funds Finance Management Act, number 1 of 1999. That's amount to improper conduct and maladministration.
Yes. You remember... Did you write that?
Yeah, this was in the draft of the PP that I had prepared for her at the time.
Yes.
The former PP.
The former PP, yes. In other words, you wrote that.
Yes.
Yes. So, that's the point I'm making, that you had made findings of improper conduct and maladministration on the part of Minister Trevor Manuel and President Thabo Mbeki, correct?
Yes. Yes, correct. Can I just also explain this part so that at least I put context to it? So there was an issue about the government appointing CX, Michael Otley, to be precise, to conduct this investigation on behalf of government. And our worry was that the state resources were used to procure this service. And during the investigation, at no point did anyone amongst all the people that we had interviewed pointed out us to a situation or a document where there was either a cabinet meeting where a CX report was then considered by government. And this is around, I think, 98, 99, 2000. There was no such a document that could be produced that says, well, we received the report from CX. We felt that its findings are not something that we agree with probably, and that we decided not to implement that particular report. At no point did that happen, even on the engagements that we had with all the people that we interviewed. Not even a single one of them, of those role players who were in government at that particular time, was able to come out forthright and say, yes, we processed this particular report and we took a different direction from the one that was suggested by Michael Otley at the time in his report. So that was the view at that particular time, that state resources can't just be used and people then undermine whatever the work that had been done by the person that they had appointed. Yeah, thanks. Sure.
No, thank you. That gives context. Hence your findings of improper conduct and maladministration against the president and the Minister of Finance, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, the issue, and I'm coming to the connection between this, firstly, and the Constitution, as well as the mandate of the Reserve Bank. Yeah. So at least from what you have read, your finding was that the president and Minister Manuel had violated those three sections of the Constitution, at least, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And it is also a fact, before we get to that, it was indeed one of the explanations given by, for example, President Mbeki, in his interview with the public protector, was the issue that you have mentioned, that maybe the failure to collect the money owed in respect of what was known as apartheid corruption was because maybe at a particular time it would have had an impact on the rand and those kinds of things, correct?
Correct.
And you or the public protector at least did not accept those as legitimate reasons for not collecting money that belongs to the South African public, correct?
Are you able to point me to the minutes or part of the minutes, or you just want me to confirm if that was her version of the event?
No, I want you to confirm, because remember, okay, when I say you, and that's why I'm trying to be specific, you and Advocate Madonsela were basically on the same side of this whole debate, correct? Except for one or two differences.
Yes, we were, correct.
Yes. So I'll try to be specific, but when I say you, you must accept that I'm putting it in that context.
Okay.
And all I'm saying is that the reason why you, including you and Advocate Madonsela, would have not bought these explanations is because you believed that the money should have been recovered anyway, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And so you did not buy the story that it was economically dangerous to collect the money of our people, correct?
No, we didn't buy that idea.
Yes.
I personally didn't buy that idea.
Yeah, no, rightly so. To the extent that, and to be fair to you and Advocate Madonsela, you were fortified in that belief by the fact that also Judge Heath had found that the money was recoverable, correct?
I can't remember the specifics on Judge Heath, except to say that I think Judge Heath had found that the whole lifeboat was illicit. Yeah, it was illicit. I don't remember vividly what his take was on recovering the monies. I wouldn't want to venture on that unless you can point me to a section of his report or paragraph where he specifically says it couldn't be recovered.
Yes.
You might be referring to Judge Dennis Davis. Because I remember, I think he did mention that.
No, I think you are confusing what I'm saying, or maybe I confused you. No, I'm saying Judge, you're quite right. Judge Heath had found, and I'm trying to also to remind you, if you can do that off memory, but I'll point you to the sections. Judge Heath had found, as you correctly point out, that the lifeboat was illegal. And so did Judge Davis, correct?
Yes, correct.
The difference between them is that Judge Heath had found that the money was recoverable and Judge Davis felt otherwise. Remember that?
I remember Heath, I think Judge Heath did not issue a report, if my memory says well. He issued a statement. It's a long statement that he issued.
Yeah.
I think it was somewhere in 1999, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong on the date. So I didn't consider, we didn't consider that to be a report, and I must put that forward so that this is clear. It was a statement that he issued. The only person that issued a report was Judge Dennis Davis. He's the one that I know he did issue the report that was commissioned by, on the investigation that was commissioned by Reserve Bank at the time under, I think, former Governor Mboweni.
Correct. No, that is so, but it's not correct that you did not, you did take into account both Davis report, investigation report, but you also took into account the statement, the official statement of Judge Heath. Isn't that so?
Yes, quite correct.
Yes. And the part that, okay, let me, you want me to refer you to the, if you go to 3200,
okay. Yes, I'm on 3200.
Yeah. 5.4.1.8. You said, yes, you must have written this, that it should further be noted that the Heath Commission conducted this investigation without knowing that the CX had investigated the same matter on behalf of the government and ruled that the loan or lifeboat is recoverable. Remember that?
Yes, I do remember this now.
And then, if you go to the next paragraph, just to complete the picture, you then say, it is also common cause that former Reserve Bank governor was a Labour minister before appointed to oversee Reserve Bank, the Reserve Bank, appointed a panel of experts to investigate. I think it's just a grammatical error. To investigate inter alia whether the lifeboat was illegal, offered to Bancorp or not. Judge Dennis Davis ruled that the lifeboat was illegal and advised against recovery. So that's what I was trying to explain to you. That Judge Heath had said the man was recoverable, although he also had made comments about the run on the rent and all that. But Judge Davis had advised against attempts to recover it. You remember it now?
Yes, I do remember it now. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Right. Now, more importantly, one of the, and I'll call it excuses or reasons, which I say you did not accept, rightfully so, for the non-recovery of this money was the fact that, among others, Minister Trevor Manuel said, you know, our mandate or his mandate was to protect the economy, and that was his focus and that kind of thing. You remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
So there was therefore a connection between the mandate issues and the alleged reasons for non-recovery, correct?
What do you mean when you say the mandate? Can you try and expand that for me so that I understand how you're linking it?
Okay, let's start again. I'm saying one of the reasons, stroke excuses given for the lack of appetite to recover the money was that the primary role of the Treasury was to protect the economy. And therefore, you know, they wouldn't do anything that would jeopardize the economy. You remember that kind of discussion?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yes. So I'm saying, therefore, if that was then posed as a reason or excuse, then that would have shown the connection between the failure to recover the money and the mandate issues, the broad mandate economic issues, correct?
I don't think I have any comment on that part, Advocate Mpofu. So it's something that I wouldn't want to offer a comment on that, because yeah. I think I do agree with you on what former Minister Manuel had said on that part, but I wouldn't want to expand it further than that.
Yes, no, Mr. Advocate Chair, I think you are misunderstanding me. I'm not asking you to agree or disagree with the view as such. I can understand why you don't want to venture into that. Yeah. All I'm saying is that, rightly or wrongly, there was a connection that was being proposed. Whether it was genuine or not genuine is another issue. That was being proposed between the mandate of the Treasury and the failure to recover the money. There was, yes, that connection was made in your time, correct?
Yes, that connection was made.
Yes, yeah, and it was made before Advocate Nkwebane's time. It was made to you,
Correct.
Yes. So the and okay, thank you. Then at least we're on the same page, because I thought you said you didn't understand the connection between the mandate issues and the and this report. But to assist you, can I take you to 3202?
Okay.
Right. This emanates from your discussions with President Mbeki and Minister Manuel. It says there, the president contended that part of the reasons money was never recovered had to do with the economy, which had to be protected. Remember that?
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be a full stop, but again, there were some editorial issues there. His view was corroborated by that of former Minister of Finance, Mr. Trevor Manuel, who stated that his primary role was to protect the interests of the economy against any potential risk, taking into consideration that we were in the process of rebuilding the economy. Remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
Yes. So when he says his primary role, he's talking about his mandate, correct?
Yes, he's talking about the mandate of the Treasury, I think, at the time.
Yes, of the Treasury, which broadly speaking covers the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank falls on the monetary policy side, but he's talking about the role of the state, so to speak.
Yes. Correct. Correct.
Yes. Now, yes. So that's all I'm saying. So would you therefore agree with me now, against this background, that there was, and again, I must stress, I'm not saying you agree with it, but there was a stated connection between the mandate issues of the state, of the ministry, of the Reserve Bank, and so on, and the failure to recover the money. Whether it was a good or bad reason, that's another matter. But there was a stated connection, correct?
Yes, there was a stated connection.
Good. Thank you. And that connection between the mandate of the Reserve Bank, among other things, and the failure to recover the money was made to you and Advocate Madonsela long before Advocate Kobane was even interviewed by Parliament, correct?
Yeah, you are referring to the mandate of Treasury, because our
Sorry to cut you. No, I'm referring to the statement made at 5.4.3.2. I'm saying those kinds of statements and connections were made long before Advocate Kobane came into the picture, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. All right. Now, and I must stress again, I'm not accusing you of having accepted all these things that were being said, but at least they were said to you and Advocate Madonsela, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Right. Now, the evidence of the public protector will therefore be that what the connection between the mandate issues and the lifeboat issue were not her invention, but something that she found already, as I've pointed out, already even demonstrated in the provisional report. Obviously, you'll agree with that because we've just looked at 3202, correct?
Yeah, yes, considering that she had an opportunity to go through the reports and the draft report when she arrived and all the evidence. Mm. Yes, I would agree. And that's also her vision, because she carried forward with it. There was an opportunity for her to probably not go with that, as she had done with the other changes that are there in the report. I'm sure that would be a proposition that would be acceptable as well, that she had an opportunity to amend whatever it is that she needed to amend on the report, as me and you agree that the final say rests with her in the report, or rested with her in as far as the final report.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'll go even further than you and say that not only did she have an opportunity, she had a duty to satisfy herself that what is in the report, what must be retained must be retained, what must be discarded must be discarded, because it was now her responsibility. Would you agree?
I do agree with you.
Yes. But the point I'm simply making is that she did not discard this portion, because probably she agreed with the connection that was being made. You and I can assume that if she did not discard something, she probably agreed with it, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Yes. No. Then we're on the same page. The only thing I wanted to illustrate is that this was not her invention. She found it there, and as you correctly point out, she retained it voluntarily, correct?
Right. Yeah, because it was substantiated with evidence that was there.
That was there, yes. Yeah. Okay. So this notion that, she expanded or came up with, all sorts of wayward angles to this is not founded by the evidence, because these statements like these were already in the document, in your document, long before she arrived, correct?
Yes, they were in our discussion document, draft document.
Yes. Thank you. All right, so that then takes care of the first theory that she's being impeached for is the fact that she allegedly had expanded this thing, which is completely false. All right, now let's then go to the issue of the next theory, which was the issue of the remedial action. You would agree that, okay, let's start with the small issue of prescription. I think there was some confusion between you and Advocate Mayosi in relation to the issue of prescription and the in dublum rule. Let's take it step by step. Your evidence is that you and Advocate Madonsela held different views regarding the issue of prescription, correct?
Correct.
You were of the view that the money, and again, for what it's worth, I support your side of that debate, yeah. You were of the view that this was a lot of money, billions of rand that belonged effectively to South Africans, stolen by the apartheid regime, and that everything should be done to recover that money, correct?
Correct.
Advocate Madonsela was not of a different view, obviously, that about the importance of recovering the money, but she held the view that legally it was untenable because of prescription, of the Prescription Act, correct?
Correct.
You differed sharply with her on this question, and your differences were never resolved, correct?
Yes, I would say in the draft, final draft that I prepared for her, obviously I had to go with a view. This issue was obviously just a people who would differ, obviously, because of issues that would discuss outside, all these things. That's why I had to prepare two reports. When I'm saying outside, I'm talking about in a boardroom where we would be discussing reports, and I would say, I disagree with your vision, and I've done my own research on this. And I think I would want you to have a look at this issue and see whether you could be moved with the argument that I'm putting forward or not. So that was just a normal, issue of differing of people that are working together. The same with Advocate, but Kwebana, I did differ with her on few issues as well. Yeah. So it was a normal issue of being, carrying a different view from the one that was being carried by the PP.
Yes, no, I think you have explained that. And I think your evidence is that, in fact, it was your professional duty to do so, and none of them, took umbrage to the fact that you might express a different view, even if they would insist on their view. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. Yes.
Yeah, so they were both quite open-ended, rather open-headed about those differences. Ultimately, she, whether it was Advocate Mkhwebane or Madonsela, she's the public protector, so I suppose her view would prevail, correct?
Correct.
Yes. But in respect of this issue of prescription, and in fairness to you, you did indicate that you even went to the extent of preparing two reports, one supposedly saying the money should be recovered, the other one saying that it cannot be recovered because of prescription, correct?
Correct.
But the point I want to make is that your problem were resolved by providence or by coincidence, because once Advocate Madonsela was out of the picture, you discovered that Advocate Mkhwebane actually shares your view on prescription, correct?
Yes.
And that must have been a pleasant development for you, because then you didn't have to have that fight of two reports, correct?
Yes, I would agree with that proposition.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the and as I say, I agree with both you and Advocate Mkhwebane, and I disagree with Advocate Madonsela, because the issue of prescription, and anyway, you are a lawyer, I don't want to bore other people about it, but the point of the matter is that you felt that the Prescription Act could be overcome, that there would be ways around it, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Now, that issue is quite separate but related to the issue that Advocate Mayosi was pointing you to, which is the issue of the in duplum rule, correct?
Yes, you're correct.
Yes, and if you look at it on both sides, and again, maybe we should explain to the people who are not lawyers. I'm one of those people who am against this use of Latin when it's unnecessary. Yeah. So the in duplum rule simply means that if I lend you, well, in my case, it wouldn't be more than 10,000 rand. If I lend you 10,000 rand and you don't pay it, then I can only ever recover 20,000 rand from you. You agree?
Yes, I agree.
In other words, what it means is that the interest charged on the loan should never be allowed to exceed the capital that was lent. That's the simple, without the Latin, that's really what the rule means, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Now, and that's the issue that you introduced. It's the only relationship between that and prescription is the fact that obviously if the matter was not recoverable, then you can't even start talking about the in duplum rule, correct?
Right.
So your debate on the in duplum rule was once again based on your firm belief that the money was recoverable, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, if you then go to, sorry. I think it's 8.4.32. I think it's 3374, if I'm correct. Yes, page 3374.
Okay, 3374. Okay.
actually starts at 3373. If you can just go back a little bit. You have already confirmed that that paragraph, which I'm not going to read, but which explains the Indublum rule in the report was inserted by you, correct?
Yes, correct.
And you cited the authority of that being the case of Mago versus Gardner, the 2010 case, correct?
Correct.
And the point I want to make about this is the following. Once, and Advocate Mkhwebane agreed with your assessment of the effects of the Indublum rule, obviously, correct?
Correct.
Just as she had agreed with you on the issue of the prescription rule. But the real bigger point that I want to make is that because you and her agreed, that sentiment then found itself in the remedial action, correct?
Correct.
Which we will find at 8.2.3 on the same page. Just further down, thank you. Thank you, one more, yeah. So the remedial action that you proposed and she accepted was that the National Treasury, together with the Reserve Bank, should institute legal action against APSA in order to recover 16% interest accumulated over a period of 5 years, amounting to 1.1 billion plus interest, further ensure that the interest is not more than the capital value and so on.
Yes.
Correct? Yeah.
Correct.
Right. And obviously this did not go down well with the National Treasury and the Reserve Bank. Correct.
I don't know about what transpired after I had left, because this was part of the report that was issued in December. So I don't even know how they've responded to that, whether they accepted this proposition or this point in that report. That's all I can say, Chair, because I was no longer there. I didn't even have sight to their responses to the provisional report.
Yes, no, fair enough. But you are a South African. You know that they challenged the remedial action, which hence we ended up with the Constitutional Court litigation, correct?
Yes, they challenged the final report.
And I'm sorry, carry on.
I wanted to indicate that they challenged the final report, which was finalized when I had already left the Office of Power Protector. So that's why I have my own reservation about commenting on that, because that was done after I had left the office.
Yes, but I thought you agreed with Advocate Mayosi that that challenge was specifically focused on the remedial action. That's why I'm taking you to the remedial action, not so much the report on the investigation itself.
Okay. Yes, if you put it in the manner in which you have put it, that I'm a South African, I should obviously have probably know about what was happening. Yes, I'm aware that the parties that were not happy with the findings, they took the PP all the way to the Concord.
Yes. Yes. And yes, yeah. No, it's to be expected, as we were saying, when that's part of the EFF Nkandla report, which says that when you are a public protector, you are up against very powerful forces, and potentially they won't take your remedial action lying down, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, and well, as I said, these were quite powerful forces. Firstly, you had already found maladministration against a former president, against a minister, and now you are asking the National Treasury and the Reserve Bank to effectively try and get the money and APSA to pay back the money, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Now, The other issue is that the if we just link then this issue of the remedial action again to the mandate issues, our earlier discussion. You now know, either with the benefit of hindsight or because you've read the report or just because you are a South African, but you know that part of the remedial action that was proposed was for Parliament to consider a motion about the mandate of the Reserve Bank, correct?
Is that how it was put in the report, that they should consider, or it was a direct instruction to Parliament? Maybe you can clarify that for me so that I can answer it properly.
All right. No, let me clarify it. Okay. No, there's no such thing. That's part of the noise that was being made about it. But you, at least you and I, as a lawyer, you know that an amendment to the Constitution can only be done by the National Assembly, correct?
Correct.
And that amendment would have to be tabled before the National Assembly, correct?
Correct.
And if it did not attain the necessary majority, it would never succeed, correct?
Absolutely.
So the mere fact that an amendment is tabled can never be, it would be ridiculous to suggest that if you table an amendment, therefore it means it's going to actually happen, because that depends on the voting of the members of Parliament, correct?
Well, you're quite correct. But I would want to understand whether what was the reading of that remedial action? Because I think the reading may have been a problem, and which is what I would comment as an African, that that's how I viewed it, that perhaps there could have been a particular way of putting that in the final report, so that it does not come with the suggestion that says there's an instruction from the Public Protector for Parliament to then do what she's asking them to do in that particular way.
No.
Yeah.
Let me explain it to you. No, thank you. I hear what you're saying, but I'm just saying, as a matter of fact, there's nobody, whether the Public Protector or me or you or even a member of Parliament, you can table an amendment like some of us would like to have an amendment on Section 25 of the Constitution. But tabling that amendment does not mean that it's going to happen, correct?
Yes, I agree with you.
Yes. So the point I'm making, and I'm coming to your question, the point I'm making is that whatever the wedding or non-wedding, that's the point that Chief Justice Mokoeng was trying to make here. So whatever the wedding, and we will come to it for your comfort, but the reality is that a constitutional amendment can only be done if a sufficient majority of the members, two-thirds to be exact, propose that amendment, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Right. Now, but there's nothing that prevents the Public Protector or anybody for that matter, or Justice Zondo or whoever, from suggesting that the Constitution should be changed one way or the other, either to bring back the death sentence or to change the voting system and so on. You'd agree with that as a general statement, correct?
Yes, I would agree with you on that.
Yeah. Okay. Now.
And also, just to qualify on that,
yes.
A suggestion obviously would not be something you want to put in the remedial action that is going to bind people. I imagine you do agree with me. You may put your suggestion probably in the body of the report, where you are discussing issues, or you are analyzing the evidence and everything, but you wouldn't put that as a direct instruction if you don't have, those powers, or you are going to overreach in some of the things that you are doing. That's all I wanted to indicate.
Yes, no, have you read Section 182 of the Constitution?
Yes, I have read it. If you can remind me of it, but I have read it before.
It's the one that deals with the powers of the, well, you wrote about it in your draft report.
Powers of the power protector.
Yes, it's that one. And just to assist you in your, it's the first thing at 3222. Okay, fine. No, let's start so that we don't go up and down. Let's start with this.
Okay.
1821 is the one that talks about the powers of the public protector, okay?
Yes.
Yeah. And it says the her power is to regulate as regulated by national legislation, which is the PP Act, to investigate any conduct in state affairs, in the public administration, and in any sphere of government, alleged or suspected to be improper or to result in any impropriety or prejudice. You know that part, eh?
Yes, I do.
And you know that any sphere of government means literally that any sphere of government. So it could be in the legislature, where they amend constitutions, or it could be in the executive, or it could be in the judiciary, subject to a qualification, but also it could be in the local government, provincial government, and so on, correct?
Correct.
And these are powers that have been defined by the Constitutional Court as very wide powers, and by the SCA as almost limitless powers, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, I'm saying that in the context of that, and linked to the powers in Section 182.1c, which is to take appropriate remedial action, you'd agree that the remedial action must be linked to those wide powers, correct?
Correct.
Right. And in fact, in your, if you go to 3222 of the report, which is the version that you and Advocate Matonsela had written, you locate this whole exercise exactly in Section 182, correct? If you go to Roman 1 and 2.
Just a moment.
Yeah. 3222, yes, and there's Roman 1 and Roman 2.
Okay.
Yeah, in Roman 1, she, as you say, she had this thing of giving the reports names, correct?
Yes, correct.
And this one she called lifeboat or gift.
Yes.
Yeah, and it says, therefore, lifeboat or gift is my report as a public protector issued in terms of Section 182.1 of the Constitution and Section 8.1 of the Act. And then the next, Roman 2 says, the report communicates my findings and appropriate remedial action I'm taking in terms of Section 182.1c of the Constitution following an investigation and so on and so on. So you'd agree that then this report was produced in the exercise of the extensive and almost limitless powers of the public protector to investigate matters in any sphere of government and to issue appropriate remedial action in respect thereof, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, against that background, I'm saying to you that even in remedial action, there would be nothing wrong in principle with the public protector putting, let's assume the public protector felt that a certain section of legislation or even of the Constitution was the cause for the sufferings of the people of South Africa in one way or the other. Then it would be incumbent upon her in respect of those wide powers to suggest or that those sections should be looked at, and I'm putting it at a low level deliberately, so that we can agree, and then I'll take it to another level. Do you agree with that?
Okay, I disagree with that proposition. The remedial action should always be confined to the evidence that has been provided and the complaint. So you can't then go in and recommend something that is completely out of what the complainant has asked you without any evidence backing that up. Say, for example, somebody had mentioned that the problem that we have in this particular case, if I were to give an example, the reason these monies were not recovered was because of probably the manner in which the powers of the central bank have been crafted. That could have been probably the reason. That would obviously be a good reason to say, well, based on the evidence that I have before me, I think that the mandate of Reserve Bank need to change. This was not a case about that. This was not a systemic investigation where you are saying there's a systemic problem, that we need to address, and you'll then come up with a remedial action that is quite general, in addressing the problem. There was a specific issue that needed to be dealt with, and we ought to have confined ourselves to the specific issue. Obviously, taking into account what you've mentioned, that the Million Guardian judgment was quite clear in terms of approaching the investigation with an open mind, but it didn't have to happen within, as far as this one is concerned. That's my view on it.
Yes. No, Mr. Advocate Chualule, believe me, I respect your view, but that's not what I'm interested in right now. I'm saying to you that, all of us as South Africans can have all sorts of views as to what must happen. I think we have a right to that. So I'm never going to deny you that right.
Yes.
I'm making a slightly different point. I'm saying to you that, I think we are in agreement. You and I have agreed already that an investigation cannot be confined by the complaint. It can take its own. I gave you the example of the Gupta, something that you are very familiar with, of the remedial action that was in the state of capture report to what we have now, which is the Zondo report. I mean, the two are almost completely unrelated. You'd agree?
Yeah, I do agree with you.
Yes. So by its nature, an investigation cannot be confined to the complaint. As it was said in the Million Guardian case, it takes its own life, because as you might investigate, you might be investigating me, and then as you're investigating me, you find that my Leonard Jr. was also involved. Then you investigate him, then you find that 25,000 other people were involved, and so on. That's the nature of investigation, as opposed to adjudication, which is confined by pleadings. That's just basic theory of investigations, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Now I'm saying against that, you would therefore agree with me that this idea, which you are repeating here, that you must be confined to the complaint, is actually incorrect if we look at the jurisprudence and the theory of investigations, correct?
Yes, I'm saying both. Yeah, but just to contextualize the issue,
yes,
both the complaint and the evidence that you'll be receiving during the course of the investigation will direct the investigation until the end. And that's how we have been conducting the investigation. So it can take a particular direction based on the evidence that you are receiving. You might find that the witnesses that you are interviewing might point you to a different direction of where you could find further evidence that will lead to the resolution of the complaint.
Absolutely. No, then we are going somewhere. So we, at least you and I, agree that you are not confined by the four corners of the complaint. Agreed?
Correct.
Yes. Okay, now let's take it to the next level of what you're saying, which I also agree with. Now, the idea that, so I mean, one of the things that's cited by the independent panel, for example, is the fact that Advocate Hoffman says that was not his complaint. But that's completely irrelevant, because who cares what his complaint was? If the investigation led to all sorts of other doors opening, that's in the nature of investigations. We agree on that, and then we go to the next level, correct?
Yes. Yeah, but also I don't know what transpired, Advocate Mpofu, so that at least I don't comment on things that happened after I'd left the office. I do not know what evidence was brought to the PP, which obviously made her to come up with all the remedial actions that obviously were not in the provisional report. I don't know what kind of evidence was there that moved her. So I do not want to really much comment on that part, because it might obviously create a problem for me.
No, Mr. Believe me, I'm not going to do that to you, because it would be unfair. All I'm saying, and again, I think you and I are on the same page. If I contextualize what you are saying, you are therefore saying, assuming that there was a complaint, and assuming that there was further evidence at the disposal of the public protector, then should have been entitled to go beyond the complaint, correct?
Correct. Correct.
Yes. Now, I'm saying to you, now, as a matter of fact, I'm putting it to you that actually between the time, and you correctly say that you can't be held accountable for the period when you're not there. So from the 31st of December, which is when you left, and the release of the report, which was in June, there was indeed accumulation of new evidence which pointed in the direction of the remedial action. In the, if that is so, if I'm right with that, then you would agree that it would be competent for the public protector to expand the remedial action, correct?
Yes, correct. That can happen.
Yes, thank you very much. Now, and I'm saying to you, not only was there that evidence which was accumulated, and evidence has been given here by Mr. Kekana that, for example, they traveled to Cape Town to meet some economists. I know it was be outside of your time, yeah. And all sorts of things that happened in your absence. But I'm saying to you that the evidence before this commission is that indeed there was the accumulation of that evidence, and it is what led the public protector to act as she did. You can't dispute that, because you were not there, correct?
Correct. I can't dispute that.
Yes. All you can tell this committee is that if indeed there was evidence, and of course you know that there must have been evidence, because you did not complete that exercise, or you may or may not know that it was carried out it was completed later by Advocate Niels van der Merwe. I don't know if you know that, but you know him at least, correct?
Yeah, I know Advocate Niels van der Merwe. As to whether he completed the report, I'm not aware of that.
Yes. Then I will, well, he did. No, I'm talking about the exercise. When I say the exercise, I mean the research that the PP had asked you to do about other jurisdictions and their reserve banks, correct?
Okay. I'm sorry.
No. I shouldn't ask it like that, because you've already said you didn't know that Advocate van der Merwe proceeded with that exercise. I'm wondering if the evidence leaders can help me, because I thought I had the reference, but there is the document which we flighted before during Mr. Kekana's evidence, which is called Public Protector's Observations on Constitutional Principles and so on and so on.
bundle H, item three, page three.
Sorry, can you give me that again, advocate?
It's bundle H, item bundle three.
H. Item three.
Page three.
Page three, thank you. Can you go there, please? Yes. Can you see that, advocate?
Yes, I can see.
Yes. Okay. It's common cause. Okay. Can you just go to the introduction? Yes. Okay, I'll just read literally a few sentences. I don't want to bore you with the contents of this here. And the purpose of this is just for you to identify that this was a similar or related exercise to the one that you had been doing. It started as far back as 2008, the Parliamentary Task Team on Oversight and Accountability in the Guide of Oversight noted that the Reserve Bank Act 1989, as well as sections 223 and 225 of the Constitution, are not sufficiently aligned to the constitutional requirements for mechanism on oversight, inter alia section 42 of the Constitution, and so on. Carry on to 1.2. It says the public protector's experience and observation on the current governance arrangements relating to the Reserve Bank confirm that it is necessary to reflect on the constitutional principles applicable to fully fledged central bank within the economic context of our country and needs of our democratic society. Go to 2.3. That's it. Yeah. The structure of shareholding of bank has, however, not been amended since its inception. The South African Reserve Bank and seven other central banks, Belgium, Greece, Italy, whatever, have shareholders other than government on their respective countries. South African Reserve Bank lists its shares on the JSC. Okay, do you agree broadly that this is along the lines of the exercise that you had started, correct?
Yes, I agree.
Yes, thank you. No, that's all I wanted to say, yeah. I just wanted to, okay, I'm saying to you, it's common cause then that after your departure, that exercise was, that the document I've just read you is a product of the work of advocate Niels van der Merwe. So it looks like then, that's why I was putting to you hypothetically before, saying if there was such gathering of evidence, and I know you were not there, but now I'm putting it more emphatically, I'm saying it would seem therefore that there was the gathering of such evidence, correct?
I'm not sure if you are referring to, you want me to comment on, firstly, the responses that were received from the parties, because I would want to get an understanding. My vision of how it would have happened is, if amongst the people that were implicated, for example, that the prelim report had gone to, any of those parties or either of those parties had responded in the manner that it then changes the whole trajectory of the investigation, this exercise would have been necessary. So I'm not seeing that link right now where you are saying to me, following the response from the people that are implicated, be it the presidency and everybody, the power protector saw it fit that this process didn't need to be done to ensure that there is a research that is done in relation to other central banks around the world. So I'm not seeing that connection, but I might be wrong. You might be able to point me to that, where probably I could agree with you that this was also necessary in the end.
No. I'm not talking about necessity. I'm talking about, now you are moving us backwards. You and I have traveled far from that. You and I have demonstrated that in your report, long before Advocate Mkhwebane came to the picture, the connection between the mandate issues and the failure to recover the money was made, correct?
Yes, there was that.
Yes. Yes, I don't want to go back to that because I'm going to run out of time. I don't want to go back. We've covered that ground. I'm saying, assume, so don't ask me about the connection now because I thought you and I have done that. But I'm saying now we're on another plane. We're saying, provided there was further evidence on top of the complaint, which was done in the 6 month period that you were not there, then the remedial action would have been, might have been justified. That's what you said, correct?
Yes, that's what
yes.
I said.
Now I'm, yes. So the only thing I'm doing, advocate now, is not to talk about whether it was necessary or unnecessary, but that's for others to determine. It is simply for you to accept that there was some further gathering of evidence in your absence. And I've said to you, one, this is evidence that's already before this commission, so it's not disputable. I'm saying that there was the further work that was done on the topic that you had been asked to research by Advocate Van der Merwe, which I've just shown you. You accept that as a fact?
Yes, I accept that, even though I was not there, so I do accept that.
Yes, good. And we'll also be prepared to accept that there was other work which was done in conjunction with one economic expert from Cape Town. Again, you are not involved with that, but that you can accept that there's evidence before this commission from Mr. Kekana that such consultations with that expert were made. Do you accept that?
Yes, I read that on his affidavit.
Correct. And it's also in the judgment, the parts of the judgments which I read out before cross-examining you. So I'm saying, therefore, it would therefore seem that the condition which you have put for the, which would have justified such a remedial action, namely that further work would have had to be done, accepting that there was a connection that was made earlier, and then that work was done, then leads us, it completes the picture. It means then all the three ingredients that you have prescribed were met. A, there was the complaint. B, there was the connection that was made between the work that you were doing, or rather the non-recoverability of the debt and the mandate issues. And C, there was further evidence which was gathered. Whatever that evidence is, you don't know. And for now, let's say I also don't know. But those three steps were therefore met, correct?
Yeah, they were met. I would agree with that proposition, even though I don't know what evidence was used to justify that.
Fair enough, yeah. No, I don't expect you to know. I mean, that would be for somebody else who was there. It would be unfair to now go further with you and say that was that evidence good or bad and so on, because you were not there, correct?
Correct.
Right, okay. No, then I think we've made a lot of progress. I think then we have established, firstly, that the ambit of the investigation was long before Advocate Kwabane came was already dealing with the mandate issues and the constitutional issues that you have raised. And now we've also established that the remedial action, assuming those three steps were in place, was competent. Now, the last issue I want to talk to you about is just to clean up a few issues. You said that you were not involved in the interview with Mr. Basetla. Am I right?
Correct.
Can you explain the circumstances under which you were not involved in that? Was that because it happened before your time, or was there any other reason?
It happened before my time.
All right. But you can confirm that there was interaction between the SSA and Advocate Matonsela.
Yes, I can confirm that she interviewed Billy Masetla. As, yeah.
Yes, and that was logical because they were, after all, the signatories to the CX contract, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yes. All right. Now, the other just small bits and pieces of information was there's a whole complaint often repeated by Advocate Hoffman that the Section 7-9 provisional report was not, that he was not served with it as the complainant. You remember that?
Yes. Yeah, I remember
and
that.
I think, yes, and you've made it very clear that that complaint is unjustified because after all, Section 7-9 specifically enjoins the public protector to give those reports or Audi alteram partem rights to implicated parties, correct?
Correct, yeah. All I can say, the advocate chair, is that the only thing that we needed to do, which I would accept if we didn't do that, I can't remember, I may have called him, I may not have called him at the time, or the PA may have called him, was just to update him on the progress, just to say to him, we've now released the prelim report or Section 7-9 letter to the parties. We've given them 14 days. After the 14 days has lapsed, we'll then provide him with another update in terms of the progress that the PP is making in as far as that investigation is concerned. But the report was obviously not going to be submitted to him at all.
Yes, and you did that as a matter of courtesy, not because of any legal obligation, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Sorry, you say did or remembered. Apology, Advocate Mpofu.
Okay, Chair.
You said you did or you don't remember if you did that.
Yeah, I'm saying no. That would have been done as a form of courtesy if that did happen, because between the 21st of December and month of 21st of December to 31st, he did make contact to the office, and that's why I was notified that he indicated that there is a report out there. He is worried that he was never given an opportunity to comment on
that. That's fine. Okay.
So that was the issue.
Thank you. Proceed, yeah. Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, thanks for clarifying that. Yeah, and therefore, as I say, I think you've covered this in your statement. You don't find Mr. Hoffman's advocate, Hoffman's plaintiff complaint in that regard to be justified in law, correct?
No, correct. You're quite correct.
Yes, because of course, and that's why you extended the courtesy. He is a complainant, so he has some kind of interest, but that does not elevate him to an implicated party, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Right. Then you have also said that the Section 7-9 provisional reports were served by you on, among others, the presidency, correct?
Correct.
And all the other implicated parties, National Treasury?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Reserve Bank and APSA, correct?
Correct.
All right. Hold on, let me just check where in your statement you refer to that. I think it's paragraph 32 of your statement.
Thank you.
At 3148, Chairperson. Okay, so those are the implicated parties that you can remember. The presidency, governor of the Reserve Bank, the Minister of Finance, and Absa Bank, correct?
Correct.
Right. Right. Okay. I have something else, but I'd rather forget that something else than the next point. Yeah. So I'll go to the next point. You agree that the statement of Mr. Kekana is incorrect insofar as it suggests that the provisional report was not quality controlled, correct?
Yes, yes, I agree. I actually wanted the specifics because I saw that paragraph 15 of his affidavit was not specific in terms of what he was referring to. So it's difficult for me to then be able to comment on that without that being put forward to me.
Yes, no, but let's just deal with it very systematically, very quickly. I'll ask you a few questions on it. The report, the provisional report that Advocate Madonsela left behind had been worked on by, among other people, you, correct?
Correct.
That report had gone many times to think tank, for example, correct?
Nope, it had not gone to think tank. It was compiled in the private office, and there was an interaction between me and the power protector. Then, even when the current power protector joined the office, that interaction continued in that regard.
Okay, so fine, fair enough. So, are you telling us that in the 6 years life of this report, it had never served before think tank?
Yes, the draft report. Maybe just to explain, share. The draft report was only prepared in 2016. There was no draft report before that. All that was happening prior to that were just a process of investigation. So it could not have gone to think tank because it was only in 2016 that we had the draft.
Yes, and okay, we'll come back to this. The before lunch, you gave, what were the reasons for this report having taken 6 years? I'm sorry, I used the wrong word. I said report. I was there to say, what was the reason? You said you had asked for reasons and you were given some reasons why this investigation had lasted for so many years.
Okay.
About 5 to 6 years. Just if you can tell the committee just some of the key reasons.
Okay. What I was informed at the time was that first there was an issue with the unit that was supposed to do the investigation. There's some sort of hesitance and a view that says perhaps it should not be investigated, largely based on the arguments that were being raised by Reserve Bank and I think APSA and I think Treasury also raised some of the issues that why are we touching this issue? They relate to whether we should go back to issues that happened more than 2 years ago. That was the first issue. And also whether we are touching a matter that happened prior to the establishment of the office of the power protector. Those were some of the reasons. So there were a number of discussions in the office about that. And that then, when I was informed, delayed the whole process of properly commencing with the investigation. That was the issue, but that whole issue was then resolved somewhere around 2013. You would see that there were a number of interviews that were done during that particular time as well, and then later on as well. So those were the reasons that I can recall, Chair.
Yes, thank you. And there were no reasons. Well, between 2013, okay, that's fine. That would explain that let's call it ideological debate between those who said this should be done and those who said that should not be done between 2011 and 2013. What was the reason for the delay between 2013 and the 2016?
At that time, I think the former PP had an intern who was working in our office.
Your volume, I think your volume has done what mine sometimes does. So okay. Something has just happened. I can't hear you.
It's a problem on your side. Can you hear me, Advocate Mbof?
Yes, but you are also low, Chair. Then maybe it's on my side. Let me try this.
Yeah, it's on your side. We can hear him. Let's fix it.
Okay, I can hear you better now, Chair. Okay, continue, Mr. Advocate.
Okay, can you hear me, Advocate?
Yes, that's better, much better, much better.
Thank you. Yeah, the what I was told was then was that between, I think, around 2013, the PP had an intern who was working with her, and that particular intern assisted her to a certain extent, and then he left the office, and there were also issues that were raised, which are similar to the ones that I've already highlighted, relating to a unit within the office, which is GGI, which had its own reservation about the whole investigation. That delayed the process until the PP then decided herself that this was going to be done in a private office, to fast track the investigation. So those were some of the reasons that we advanced at that particular time.
Okay, so effectively this, let's say 3 year or 4 year delay was simply because the PP was not getting the necessary support from the Office of the Public Protector to do this investigation, correct?
Yeah, I would put it in that particular way. She didn't have that much support in terms of that because of the views that were obviously being canvassed by some of the colleagues, the former colleagues in the office in relation to that, to this investigation.
Yes. Well, would you agree that she should have, instead of making a complaint and wait for more than 5 years, she should have just put her foot down and make sure that the investigation is done, or, you know, get people who are willing to do the work of the public protector?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. But obviously, one of the things that I also remember is that, yes, there were so many investigations that were taking place, you know, during that particular period. Obviously, I'm not saying this should have this was parked as a result of that, but there was an issue of trying to make sure that there is a balance in terms of the attention that is being given to different investigations or complaints that were lodged with the office. So that was also a reason. There were so many complaints that were coming through, especially that would require more time for the PP to finalize during that period. You'd remember the Prasa matter as well. I think it came somewhere around that particular period. So there were so many issues that were taking place, which obviously led to the delay in the finalization of this particular investigation as well. But the complainant was always kept abreast of what of the developments in that regard.
Yes, but anyway, we know now that the current public protector managed to get the final report out within 7 months of her coming into office, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. All right. Now, putting aside all those internal issues then, the public protector, Madonsela, do I understand you correctly that one of the reasons why you and her basically almost like a one-man show of yourself doing this investigation was exactly as a result of those frustrations? So she wanted to locate it in her office and monitor the progress herself, correct?
Yes, to fast track the investigation. That was the idea.
Yeah. Yes. Now, and this goes then goes to the issue I wanted to raise with you, which is the quality assurance aspect of the report then would then have been located in the same place. In other words, in you and her dealing with this report, correct?
Yeah, correct.
And to that extent, there was continuous quality assurance by you and Advocate Madonsela, correct?
Yes, correct.
And therefore, the Mr. Kekana's idea that, the provisional report had never been quality assured prior to it being leaked is false, correct?
Yeah, I think, but let me just try and explain that. You'll tell me if that's how you understand it. I think Mr. Kekana's understanding was the procedure that was established in the office where reports would go through a process where they are submitted to think tank, which was, I would call it a highest decision-making body in as far as the reports are concerned before the Power Protector signed them. He may have been referring to that process, which I was also part of the think tank as well. But with regard to this particular report, it never went to that particular structure because in any case, it was already at the level of the PP. And the only person who wanted to consider that was the Power Protector. And at no point did the current or the former PP said, this report must then go back and follow that particular procedure.
Fair enough. Yes, no, I understand. So exactly. So that's why Mr. Kekana's version cannot be true, because from what you are telling us is that this particular report was quality assured by you and the public protector. It may not have followed the conventional quality assurance route, admittedly, but it was quality assured, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And when you were doing the handover to Mr. Kekana, did you explain the, let's call it, unique, unconventional route that this particular investigation had taken because of the problems of dissent or non-cooperation, that this report had taken a unique route, so to speak? Had you explained that to him?
No. No, I didn't.
Okay. But he knew that it came from the public protector's report and that you had worked on it, at least, rather you and the public protector had worked on it, correct?
Yes, it was common course in the public protector's office that myself and the PP working on that, yeah.
Yes, Mr. Kekana, well, this is the point. I think Mr. Kekana, as I indicated earlier, his mission in life was to portray the public protector in a particular light instead of just giving us factual information, and unlike a witness like you. But he also says that this was also, in my experience, a significant departure from standard procedure. You've already explained why this particular report took a different route, correct?
Correct, yes.
And then he says, when the provisional report was leaked, I noticed that it contained numerous errors and was missing vital information. Do you know what he was talking about here?
No, I don't know what he was talking about. And that's the part that I said, if he was specific on the issues that he's referring to there, perhaps one would be able to either agree with him or disagree with him. But in the manner in which his affidavit is crafted, it's difficult to disagree or agree with his version.
Yes. And in any event, he and others, did you know Mr. Matlawe?
Yes, I worked with Advocate Matlawe.
Yes. So in any event, I'm sure you know now, even if you just know it from the grapevine, that after the think tank, or even before that, before the think tank was even abolished, the current public protector had established a quality assurance unit in her office. In other words, it was not just someone like you, it was now a unit. You know that?
I only recall an email I received, which I think, Chair, is part of my evidence, where there was, I think it may have been coming from either the PP or Chief of Staff, where she was saying the PP is establishing a task team to fast track the reports that were left by the former PP. That's all I remember. I don't have any information about what transpired thereafter I'd left. The last think tank I attended was in November 2016.
No, fair enough. No, then it means the weekly task team and the quality assurance task team that was established must have happened after your departure in December. All right. Okay. Anyway, just to round off that point, Mr. Kekana himself testified that there were these weekly meetings and some of the people who worked, or rather who participated in them, included Mr. Kekana himself, whose background was in quality assurance, correct?
Yes.
He came from the quality assurance unit himself, correct?
Yes.
And Mr. Matawe was obviously the head of quality assurance. Okay.
Good.
So even beyond your time, there must have been continuous quality assurance by the public protector and the team around her. We can accept that as a fact, correct?
I would imagine so.
Yes, thank you. All right. Right, then very quickly, let's go through. I won't have time to take you blow by blow, but effectively you have confirmed that the changes, what you call the material differences, we've already accounted for the differences that had to do with the mandate issue, correct?
Yes, we spoke about it.
Now there were other changes that you identified, and I just want, I'll ask you simple questions where you say this was my change or this was put by me and so on. Let's go to 3316. I think there was another misunderstanding between you and Ms. Mayosi. When you were referring to paragraph 5 of the executive summary, what were you talking about? Because she took you to place at 3327. Let me tell you, there are only two options. So you just tell us which one it is. If you go to, sorry, let's move away from that. If you go to 3322. Yeah, you see the heading there, executive summary. Can you see it, advocate?
Yes, I can see it.
Yeah. Now there is section 5 of that, which is on the next page, 3223. So Roman 5, you see that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I would call section 5 of the executive summary. But Advocate Mayos took you to 3327. No. It's 3233. Yes. Which of these section fives were you talking about? Was it this or the other one?
The first one is the one on the executive summary.
Yes. Okay. So she took you to the wrong place. Okay. Fine. And that's what you were referring to when you were saying this was a new, rather an addition, one of the differences. Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's
fine. Those were not changes that were made by me. Yeah.
Yes, I'm just clarifying, yeah, no, because I think she just took you to the wrong place. Yeah. Okay, all right. Then if you go to 3316. What did I say? 3316. At 12, Roman 12.
Okay.
You identified that as another of the developments that happened in the 6 months when you were not there, correct?
Yes, this information was not inserted by me on this part of the
report. Yes. It must have been inserted by, it was, yes, I know. The one about the primary function of the Reserve Bank is to protect the value of the currency and so on. It relates to the debate that you and I had earlier, correct?
Yes, it came after I had given the draft to the power protector, the current power protector. Were some of the things that I noticed when I got the document back.
Yes, that's what I was saying. In relation to her, what I called her gloss on the issues of mandate that you and I had discussed, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Yes.
Then there was 3318.
3318.
And that is, I think it's the one marked XX. You said that was also added.
Yes.
Yes. Were you privy to the interview with President Mbeki between Advocate Matonsela and President Mbeki, or were you present, or did you see the transcript or listen to the recording?
I was present in that meeting.
Okay. And I don't have a lot of time now. We will introduce it at a later stage, maybe via another witness. But you would agree that President Mbeki's attitude was that, firstly, as I've already correctly said, or rather you've correctly accepted, that this might have been the reluctance to collect the money might have had something to do with protecting the economy on the one hand. And he also was saying that this is a matter that should be discussed with Treasury. In a nutshell, I'm giving you broad strokes. Am I right?
Yes, you're correct.
Yes, and I'm sorry to do this. I'm just, I'm going to ask for a little bit more time from the chairperson, but he's usually not very generous. So I'm going to, I'll jump to something else before we come back to this. Chair, will you give me about 10, 15 minutes?
I actually want you to wrap up at 4 so that we can have tea and then come back with members. So I will have to negotiate your 10 minutes for the members.
I would have wanted, Chair, you know, maybe to be economical.
That's fine. I will cut you the 10 minutes. It's fine.
Let's do this, Chair. Chairperson,
yes.
To make it more economical, we can take the break now. Then I'll use the 10, 15 minutes to wrap up when I come back, and then you can, I think it's better that way. It will make it even myself so that I can structure the few questions that I want to put here.
Should I not give you the 15 minutes now so that you can just, you are flowing nicely. Let me not break it.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take that as a compliment. But
all right. It is a compliment.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. All right. Okay, fine. Let's do it now then and kill it. Yeah. All right. Let's then continue, Advocate Chualule. Let's just continue with what I was doing. I'll come back to the other issue. I was going to jump to something else just now that I've got the 10, 15 minutes. You, 3329. Uh, No, it's fine. You've already answered that. You said those are the changes to do with the interest and in Dublum rule. Those were your changes, correct?
Yes, we have dealt with this one, correct.
Yes. And then 3374. Okay, no, don't go there. It's the same thing. It's the in Dublum rule. All right. And then 3317. That's X1X. Okay. Right. Now, I just want, okay, before we without going into the text itself, just clarify for the committee just this thing. Okay. Firstly, we accept that the view of those people like you who felt that this money should be collected was that it ultimately it was related to what I've earlier called apartheid corruption, and it should have been recovered for the benefit of the poor people of South Africa, correct?
Correct.
And in support of that, if you go to the remedial action, which was proposed in your version of the provisional report, which you will find at 3215. In fact, let me do this just so that I cover 2 points in one. If you go to 8.1, this is now the remedial action section where things must be done. Again, it's located in the wide powers of the public protector contained in section 182.1C, which you and I have gone through, correct?
All right.
And then this is what is being proposed for the National Treasury and the Reserve Bank. This is now by you and Advocate Matonsela, again, long before Advocate Kobana came into the picture. You said to ensure that the systems are put in place to prevent this anomaly in providing loans and lifeboat to banks in the future. No, so I'm sorry, Mr. Chualule, I have to try and do this more in a more economical way by referring you to the, I want to refer you to the findings. Sorry about this. I want to refer you to the main findings, which were quite, shall we say, heavy-handed, if one was on the receiving end thereof. Your first finding of substance was that the public protector had jurisdiction. We've gone through that, correct?
Yes, we have gone through that.
And then the next one was whether the South African government and Reserve Bank improperly failed to implement Project Spear report, that's the CX report, dealing with the alleged stolen state monies after commissioning and duly paying for the same. And you found that the South African government and the Reserve Bank had improperly failed to do so, correct?
Yes, which paragraph are you dealing with now? Is it the one appearing on?
I'm at 3205, sorry.
3205.
I just wanted to go to the findings before we go to the remedial action, because the remedial action obviously talks to the findings, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I've just read at 6.3 at 3205. And I'll just read bits and pieces just to give a picture to someone who has not read the report in full. Someone at home who might just not understand what this whole CX thing is about here. And then at 6.3.4.1 on the next page, 3206. Yeah. So I'm doing this just to break down, because this, we know we talk about CX report, you and I, because we've read it and so on. But ultimately, this is about the public, and it's important for them and the members to understand what was really at issue here, which was the recovery of money stolen, allegedly stolen through the apartheid system and corruptly not recovered. That was the gist of Advocate Hoffman's complaint, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, 6.3.41, this is where the public protector and you say, I disagree with the former President Mbeki's contention that his office, the presidency, was under no obligation to process the CX report and that matters of finances fall within the ambit of National Treasury. So in other words, you were disagreeing with the denial of obligation, but also what one might call passing the can or kicking the can to National Treasury. You were of the view that this was the whole government was responsible for this, correct?
Correct.
And she says, it is my considered view that government had responsibility to process the CX report by virtue of having been the one that commissioned the investigation and spend public funds. Government had an obligation to ensure that the report is processed via formal structures within government and take a decision to either accept or reject the findings. This goes to your complaint or your criticism that the matter was not even taken to cabinet, correct?
Correct.
Right. And then 6.4.1, then you say, having concluded that former President Mbeki and former Minister of Finance Manuel, the matter to be adjudicated upon is whether or not the government and South African Reserve Bank acted in violation of the Constitution, the South African Reserve Bank, PFMA, and the Executive Ethics Code. We already know what you found about that.
Okay.
Then if you can, then just fast forward. Seven point one point one point four. That's a 3209. Advocate Madonson Lela then says, I was persuaded that the matter deserved to be investigated with finality, as the uncertainty it kept casting on the integrity of the government, the Reserve Bank, and financial services sector regulation was not good for the country. You remember that part?
Yes, I do remember that part.
Yes. And you also found that the public was prejudiced by the failure. Sorry, I'm now at 3212. Regarding whether the South African government and the Reserve Bank improperly failed to recover the upside, an amount of 3.202 as a result of a pseudo lifeboat given to Bancorp, later to APSA between 1998, she says, the allegation that the South African government improperly failed to recover the amount of 3.2 billion rand is partially substantiated. Remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
Next one, 3213, regarding whether 7.15, regarding whether the South African public was prejudiced by the failure of the South African government to process the CX report, the allegation that the South African public was prejudiced by the conduct of the government of the Republic of South Africa and Reserve Bank is substantiated. That was your finding, correct?
Correct.
And then the last one was 32.3214, 7.1.6, regarding whether the South African public was prejudiced, what it would take to ensure justice. So that's the build up to the remedial action, correct?
Correct.
Right. So then let's now go to 32.15, where I was with you then. Now, against the background of all those negative findings against the government, the president, the ministers, the failure to collect this money, the remedial action must be understood against that context, correct?
Correct.
And we start then where we were, I deviated from you, to ensure that the systems are put in place to prevent this anomaly in providing loans, lifeboats to banks in the future. Correct?
Correct.
And then to ensure by means of introduction of internal policies and regulation that similar circumstances are avoided in the future.
Correct.
Now, I want to pause on that one to say, obviously then the view of the current, that was the view of the public, the former public protector. The view of the current public protector was that to ensure that this doesn't happen in the future, among other things, it would be this issue of the mandate issues, correct?
You mean the current public protector?
Yes, the current one.
I wouldn't want to comment on that part because the final report, when it was done, finalized, I was not there. I would only want to reserve my comment as far as that is concerned.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I put it to you that is... It was the same motivation for this not to happen in the future. Anyway, then it says South African Reserve Bank should consider reviewing its lending policies in order to avoid similar situations in the future. Again, the accent on this remedial action was in taking measures to prevent this ever happening again, correct?
Yes, correct.
And I put it to you, I know you were not there, that it was in that same spirit that the current public protector then looked into these issues about what is happening in other countries, whether the Reserve Bank should not be looking at the economic good of the people rather than narrowly on the so-called protection of the rand. I mean, that raises a whole lot of ideological issues. But you are aware that in the country, there is a debate about the mandate of the Reserve Bank and whether that talks to the economic needs of the country, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And you are aware that one of the sharp debates in the country around that issue is this question of the private ownership of the shares of the bank, correct?
Right.
Right. Then moving forward, this was what the public protector, you and the public protector Madonsela then proposed for as a remedial action in respect of the president now. One, to ensure that former Minister Trevor Manuel and former DG of SASSA, Mr. Billy Masetla, and other ministers involved in at the time are reprimanded for their role in the processing of the CX report and failure by the National Treasury to recover the public funds. That was your proposal in Advocate Madonsela, correct?
Yes, that was in our document, yes. Yeah.
In other words, you wanted Minister Manuel and others to be disciplined by the president, correct?
Correct, yeah. You could put it in that particular way. But obviously, I must indicate that this was obviously still an internal document, which was obviously subject to a number of changes that were going to be made at a later stage, which the PP, probably the former PP at the time when she left the office, she had not yet obviously attended to all the other issues.
Yes, but she had read this and she had actually corrected it and gave you handwritten reports. She didn't delete the fact that Minister Emmanuel should be disciplined, correct?
Yes, but that doesn't mean that it was going to be a final position on the report. Yeah, I think I must put...
Yeah, it does not mean that it was not going to be a final position either, correct?
Either way, of course.
Yes. Right. And then the next one, she said, due to the lapse of time in order to put this matter to rest, Absa Bank should consider giving back to the people of South Africa, in other words, to pay back the money, hashtag, by providing housing units, clinics, and schools to poor communities identified by government and contribute higher education student funding. That was UN Public Protector Madonsela's proposal as to how the people of South Africa might be compensated for this alleged theft of their money, correct?
Correct, that was our thinking at the time.
Yes, the next one, you wanted the president to consider instituting a commission of inquiry to investigate alleged apartheid corruption as outlined in the CX report and take necessary measures. That's what you and Advocate Madonsela wanted to happen, correct?
Yes, correct. Can I just also indicate this part, Chair, for the sake of completeness?
Yes.
If you go through the CX report, and I'm talking about the real CX report, that was done by Michael Otley. It makes mention of number of institutions that benefited during the apartheid era, between I think around 84, 85, to until somewhere in 1992, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. At that particular time, me and Advocate Madonsela had a discussion about what the implication of not looking at those institutions would be. In our investigation, even though obviously the complaint wanted us to look at specific issues, but we knew that some people might argue that, well, we decided not to look at other institutions that were named in the report, in the CX report, but rather focus specifically on APSA Bank. So that was the issue at the time, and that's why this kind of a corrective remedial action was in our mind at the time, and we thought that it would then address that whole part. So that was the issue there.
Yes, and the last one you gave was touching on broader constitutional issues. Chair, if I can I just round off this point here.
Okay.
Let me round it off, Chair. The last one says to verify if any outstanding monies are due from institutions cited in the CX report, and if necessary, take appropriate action to recover same, taking into account the duties of government to redress the injustices of the past, as outlined in the preamble of the Constitution, taking into account non-jurisdiction to investigate issues that happened before the birth of this office. So in summary there, because we don't have time, you were saying that the government should take into account the constitutional imperatives of economic transformation to ensure that the apartheid-related monies that could be recovered should be recovered for the benefit of the people, correct?
Correct, specifically those that were cited in the CX report.
In the CX report, yeah. And finally, because we don't have time, can you confirm that because of the, shall we call it lethargy or the slow pace or the failure to complete certain high-profile reports, you had towards the end of Advocate Madonsela's term, various organizations protesting and toying outside because they felt that their reports should have been finalized in time, correct?
Yes, you are quite correct. We had, I would say, well-funded, you know, organizations, because I don't know what explanation one would provide for an organization that can camp at our office, at our offices a whole week. There will be someone who provide KFC to them the whole day. I'm just putting that so that at least it's clear. So we had a well-funded organization that was there, that was being provided with resources to camp at our offices until the last day of Advocate Madonsela. Yeah.
Yes, KFC aside, those people were there in protest for their reports, which had been unduly delayed in their view, correct?
Sponsored by someone, I guess. Yeah, you are quite correct in that.
Thank you very much, Advocate.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I have no further.
And correctly, I agree with you. That was liturgy.
It was more than liturgy. And it's our turn now, Chair, to go and have KFC if you give us a break here.
No, thank you. On that note, we'll take KFC for 10 minutes.
Recording stopped.
Half past.
Thanks.